This is a Baby Brunch podcast. Hi, everyone. This is our Baby Brunch podcasts in our parenting series of ordinary people who do extraordinary stuff. And an ordinary chick with really red hair and really cool glasses. How come they're green on the side, though?
Just to keep you interested.
Okay, I know.
I mean, they're basically part of my face because I have to wear them all the time.
So how bad is your eyesight?
It's terrible. It's terrible. I'm practically blind.
Oh, no. Don't be blind.
I'm like a minus 10 in my one eye and minus I'm just saying 8 that in the other eye. And I'm incredibly short-sighted. I can't see a thing.
Karen is with us in our studio today for our podcasts. Do you know why we asked you?
Because... my children are fascinating and awesome people, and I'm lucky enough to be in their lives.
I think you're more fascinating too, because I'll tell you how I know Karen. So Karen, I have three really incredibly intelligent friends. Two of them have an MBA and the other one's a writer. You're the writer.
Oh, thank you.
Okay. So tell everyone, yes. What do you do? What do you do for a living?
I write and produce television. And theatre when I can.
But she reads a lot.
Yes, I read a lot.
How many books do you have?
Oh, hundreds of books. There's bookcases everywhere in my house. That's, everywhere.
Do people come up to you and say, I want a TV job?
Sometimes, mostly they send me their scripts. Like, oh, my second cousin wrote a script. Please, can you read it and get feedback to me by tomorrow?
Of course.
Because, you know, I have that constantly. That's the main thing, yes.
What are you reading at the moment?
I just finished reading Jodi Picoult's latest book, which deals with race in America, which is a huge departure for her. And she says it's really changed her life and how she sees things. And that was a really beautiful thing to read. I'm working on an adaptation of a book, so I'm reading that.
Oh,
but
wow.
That's a different kind of reading. You have to turn on a different part of your brain. And, I've been looking back at some of those, you know, those books that you feel like you ought to have read that I never did.
I think I still haven't read them. I just don't have time.
Yeah.
See, that's why we record podcasts, so that people don't have to read.
There's a beautiful book called How to Be Incredibly Well Read in One Evening. And it's just
really?
Like,
I want
summarizes
that.
All
okay,
the books
for you.
Okay,
but who's it by?
I'll find if I've got a copy. I'll lend it to you.
Will you really?
And then you can pretend. And it's like got little summaries of all of them.
I'll give you wine. Sorry, I don't have anything else.
Fantastic.
I
goes well with
you.
Books, so yeah.
Tell me about your kids.
Yes.
Who are your children?
I have two incredible boys. Tim is 17 and Liam is 12. And yes, they are wonderful, unique creatures. They're very much their own people.
I've seen them operate and they adore you.
Aww.
Most people do because you are very likable because you're intelligent and she has these bookcases that she's referring to. But I think they're really – like growing up, I thought my dad was extremely intelligent.
Mm.
And up until this day, I mean, I love my mom and dad. I spend a lot of time with them.
Mm.
And I can see how your children just adore you. They think that you are the best.
Aww. Thank you. I try. I think I'm the nerdy, geeky, strange mom. I give them interesting experiences but I really just, as I say, encourage them to be them. And a lot of what they do is entirely their own doing. Like Liam, he wanted to learn Japanese and he was quite adamant that that's what he wanted to
Wonderful.
Do. And so he found Japanese classes and that's what he's doing. And then he's in a class with, you know, a 40-something lawyer and a bunch of people in their 20s and one or two high school students and little Liam. And, you know, that's the way they operate.
Do people criticize you for being let's assume that you're a free parent. You allow your kids to feel and do what they want to do.
Mm. I have been told it's very interesting because I've been told that really in terms of my politics and so on, which is quite far to the left, but I think that affects and influences how you approach everything in life, really. I've been told, well, you're indoctrinating your children.
Really?
And I'm going, but we all do. And that's the thing. And I think you don't see it is that if you want to call it indoctrinating, if that's the word you want to use, then if you're a particular religion, you indoctrinate your children into that religion. But you do it because you believe that that is the right way and the right thing, you know? And so, yes, I teach my children about social justice issues, and I encourage them to speak their minds, and I encourage them to be passionate and motivate and work hard and be different and push those boundaries. And yes, a lot of people think that that children should be something else, and they should be kind of, you know, put in nice little boxes and be predictable. And that doesn't work for me.
I think you and your family are far from predictable. You're a single mom.
Yes, I am.
How did you become single?
By getting a divorce is the technical answer. But the boy's father, he lives in the UK now. He hasn't spoken to the kids for about 6 years. And he likes things when they're going his way. And when they stop going his way, he doesn't like things anymore. For a long time, we kind of try to make things work for the kids. And then you go, but actually what's best for the kids is not that. What's best for the kids is not arguments and tension. And I essentially had a third child, and I wasn't willing. I had two that I needed to give my attention to. I wasn't willing to have a third one. So, yeah. There's we're the three musketeers. That's what we are.
What's the most fun that you have as a single mom? Because I mean, being married, I know that I consult my husband for a lot of stuff before making a decision. And because I have stepchildren, yes, I have to sometimes, through my husband, consult another mother as well.
Right.
So no decision is ever just made. I have two other people who I kind of have to report into.
Yes.
What's the most fun about being a single mother?
I think it is that. I mean, it's exactly that. Is that, you know, if I decide
we're going on holiday,
or tonight we're gonna screw homework, we're gonna go to Heart Bay and have fish and chips on the rocks because it's a beautiful day. And I can just do that, and I don't have to consult another adult, you know. So of course there's that. And I mean, you know, there's so much joy that comes from the kids and the bonds that you have with the kids and the adventures that you have. You know, Liam and I like to go road tripping, and
he's super cute. We
planning our cosplay outfits for FanCon. You know,
what are you planning?
Our outfits.
She just had a glint in her eye. And just so you know, Karen wears what kind of red is that on your lips?
This is called Infinite Scarlet, this one.
Which means it's almost orange, and you're a shade of like peach. Beautiful. You look great.
Thank you.
What are you planning? Are you going on holiday again?
No. Well, no, we are going to go up.
So your English is too good. I don't understand it.
No, there's FanCon happens.
Because Afrikaans. Yeah.
Where all the nerds and geeks get together, and you dress up as characters. And Liam's done it quite a lot, but now this year we're going big this year.
Please send me pictures.
I will.
Okay, this is awesome.
Yes.
Okay, so you get to play. What sucks about being a single parent?
That it's just you. You know, you can't be sick, you can't be tired, you can't be. There's no options. It's doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. It's you, and those kids, those responsibilities don't go away. So. If you've got the worst flu of your life, you're still getting up in the morning and taking them to school, and you're still the one making plans for dinner and sorting out, you know, everything that needs to be done, because it's just you, and you're the one paying for everything, which, you know, is expensive.
And hard.
And yeah, you don't get any time off, and that's no matter what, you know, even if I'm traveling or whatever else, there's wonderful people in my life that help and assist and are there. But the bottom line is always you.
You're talking about traveling. Immediately, I think of what you do for a living. Your job is so creative, and I mean this, you are so well-read that I enjoy I enjoy our conversations, because you just know so much. You know a lot, you know, because you have time to read. I don't have time to read. But do you think that there's space for that, where you say to your boss, I'm a single mom, and then they actually have a little bit of sympathy? Like, if you say, I can't be in a particular place because my children need you, do you find that people are supportive of that?
So I'm very lucky, because I have found a boss who's incredibly supportive of that.
Did you choose him?
he wanted me for the job.
Okay.
And I was very clear up front that I had certain things that were just not, I can't negotiate them. Mm. I can't negotiate them. My oldest son has autism. I have to see his psychologist every so often. I can't just not do that, you know. Mm. So I have certain things which I just have to adhere to in my life. And he's a family man himself, and he absolutely understands that. Mm. Also, my belief is you get the best out of people when you treat them like people. They're not things. They're not machines. They're not functions of something. So obviously I work in TV, and there's times when you're on set and a deadline is a deadline. Deadlines are sacred in my line of work. I mean, as a writer, you never miss a deadline. So my job is, can I manage my time around what needs to be done? But my job doesn't need to be done in office hours.
Okay.
So if things need to happen during office hours, I can make up that time on my own time. In the evenings, in the weekends, I can make that happen. So it's a give and take where they give you the trust and you take that responsibility. Mm. But provided you live up to that and you follow through, I think it absolutely works for the best, because you get people's loyalty when you treat them and their family like they matter.
Like that. You win people's loyalty when you treat them and their families like they matter.
Yes.
Wow.
Absolutely.
Let's talk about your sons.
Yes.
One of the things that I told Karen is that I want to unpack this, because I'll tell you what happened to me last week. I take my daughter to, both my daughters, I take them to dinner. We don't often go to dinner because it's expensive, and also because our children are very young. And so when we do get out every three months, every second month, it's kind of an occasion, you know?
Yes.
And there we are, and my daughter has really big hair because I'm black and my husband looks the way he does. So she has really big hair. And a woman walks past and she says, "Oh, kijk haar haare. Is it a wig?" And I look at this lady and immediately I realize something. I realize that she sees us as different.
Mm.
And different in this case, even though she thought it was funny, it wasn't nice for me.
Yeah.
And I know that sometimes people see your son as different.
Mm.
And I want to talk about that, because maybe a conversation, a podcast like this, will help people understand what are some of the things that you don't say, or how do we understand people, children, humans, why we don't just go up to people and touch them. Please don't touch my child's hair. Because I'm a mother.
Yes.
What was your son diagnosed with?
Yeah. So Tim has dyspraxia and he's on the autism spectrum, which is also known as Asperger's. They're the same thing. So I think, first of all, a lot of people don't know that. Dyspraxia is, it's really in the same family, I guess, as dyslexia, which more people know about. Dyspraxia is that the signals from your brain don't get to your hands or your coordination. It affects your coordination. They say it's about 400 times harder for people with dyspraxia to do anything with their hands. So hold a pen, tie your shoelaces, all of those very everyday kind of things that you don't have to think about.
Right.
And you know what you want to do in your brain, but your hand doesn't do that. And so there's an incredible amount of frustration, I think, especially for younger children.
Yes.
Because you know, you compare yourself always to people around you. You look at what they're capable of. You know, and he has an incredible amount of perfectionism. So he knows how wrong by classic standards things are. But it's not something that you can control. It also can affect your planning abilities, in terms of how you can structure tasks, even break things down for yourself, because there's just an area of the brain which functions in a different way to the typical.
Sure. You know, 'cause I had to ask you about this. I'm familiar with autism, but that's only because I know one of my children.
Yeah.
I'm the godmother of a boy who has autism, so I understand it.
Yes.
But the minute you don't understand something, you almost don't know how to ask, and you know so much about it. What are some of the misconceptions about dyspraxia?
I mean, I think really dyspraxia is just, it is the main thing is that it's not really known about. It's not something that his teachers automatically knew about. And it's not something that's understood. So one of the main things that it affects, just especially in schooling, now he's luckily out of that, is your handwriting. Mm. So his handwriting still looks like the handwriting of a 6-year-old. And so that's not a true reflection in any way, because once we got him an iPad and he started writing, he writes a chapter a day of his fan fiction.
He writes books?
And, oh, yes, he writes. And, you know, so as a small child, you want to avoid doing the thing that's difficult. Mm. So the thing that's difficult is doing something with your hands. So he would do anything in his power to avoid doing the work when he was a child. And that's seen as naughtiness. That's seen as disobedience. That's seen as
lazy.
All of these things. Absolutely. Mm. Or maybe he's too stupid. Maybe he doesn't understand. Maybe we need
to hold
him back.
People say that?
Oh, I was told when he was little, I was told that he needed to stay back. And he ended up matriculating last year at 16, having skipped 2 grades.
We should deliver the report card to...
and even when he was older, I had a school that refused to take him with his iPad because they said, oh, that's difficult for the teachers. What if the other kids want iPads?
Wow, because she would have to work a little bit harder.
And I'm going, but you don't stop a kid with hearing aids from having hearing aids in your class. My child needs help with writing.
Yeah.
He needs, and there is an aid. It works for him. Giving him the iPad puts him on an equal playing field with everybody else.
You're right, because then he can function.
Absolutely.
Is he in a school like other kids? I mean, you said he matriculated last year. So do I send a child who I think has dyspraxia?
Well, I mean, where he ended up, and we just absolutely loved and adored them, was Progress College. And they're not a special school. It's a college and they take all kinds of kids. They have also quite a few sort of young adults that are going back to try and finish their education. And they really see people as individuals. They had some kids there that were transitioning. They had a couple of kids with other sorts of disabilities. Mm. And they really just go, focus on yourself. You don't have to worry about other people. Mm. You don't have to judge them. You don't have to think about them. You're here on your journey. And they were incredibly willing to just find what worked, find what helped. Tim ended up doing a combination of classes with them and working with a tutor because for some things he's working better one-on-one. But yeah, they were just incredibly willing to find that space. And it's a real problem because there's very few schools that are equipped and that are willing to deal with difference because it's difficult. It's you know, as soon as somebody doesn't fit in your little box, you make life harder.
Can't we just make the main thing the main thing? It's all about learning, right?
Absolutely.
Can't we just all teach and then...
Absolutely. And you know, it's this weird... I saw a lovely analogy a few years ago, which was it's like a conveyor belt and you get put on the conveyor belt according to your age. That's apparently what...
I'd fall off that conveyor belt.
Absolutely. So we go, oh, well, you're 7. You should do this, and this.
Sure.
And going, that doesn't work for everybody. Mm. And obviously there needs to be times when we go, what works for the most number of people? We need to make all of those things. We absolutely understand there's a system, there's a huge amount of children that need an education. But there are so many kids that get lost and get forgotten about and that we lose and that really are the people that think differently, the people that are going to innovate, the people that are going to change, that are going to bring new ideas if we get them to that place as adults where they're equipped to do so.
I've seen you being quite outspoken on social media about these things that we need to know about.
Mm.
I want to touch on autism.
Yes.
I've seen a post of yours that talks about autism awareness.
Yes.
How does a child get diagnosed? Like, how do you know, okay, so this is what's going on?
Again, it's difficult. It's difficult because autism is not one thing. And I think that's why, and it's not a visible disability. Mm. It's an invisible disability is what they talk about. So autism, they talk about the spectrum. And again, I think a lot of people imagine like a volume knob, you know, when they think of a spectrum. And that's not
wheel.
Hard work. either. It's kind of like there's a circle, and if you're in that circle, you have autism. But the different aspects of it, it can affect your language, it can affect your social abilities, it can affect you sensorily. And with Tim, has no problems with his language. He's the most verbose child. He writes, he loves language. Other children are almost nonverbal or completely nonverbal. So that can manifest in different ways. On the social side, he has a lot of difficulty. He has a lot of difficulty reading social cues, understanding people, expressing himself in a way that works with other people. And a lot of it comes down to, which can be a blessing as well, is when you don't pick up on social cues, you don't get socialized. You don't you don't automatically learn these norms and rules of society that we all pick up on.
Does he have friends?
He has his best friend in the entire world, Benjamin, who we adore and love. And they've been best friends since grade 3, so since they were about 8 or 9. He's had one or two other friends, but it's very difficult to make friends. He was very badly bullied as well. And I think going back to the awareness side of things, and you asked about how do you get diagnosed. I mean, I think it's very difficult because, you know, whenever you have your first child, you know nothing. Like you're making everything up as you go along. Yeah. And
I did.
Of course. Yeah. And we still are. I mean, he's 70 and I'm still making it up as I go along. And so you don't know necessarily that your child is different because that's the only reference you have is your child. And so with Tim, it was sort of early on in schooling, at sort of the end of grade 1 that we got a diagnosis. And the diagnosis is only helpful really in terms of trying to get other people to look at how they interact with the child.
Right.
And I think that it's not useful as a label. It's not useful as a, you know, nothing like that. It's about trying to get other people, and that's where the awareness and so on comes in, is going, you assume everyone is going to think like you do. That's the basis. We all do. We all kind of try and think through scenarios and needing to understand people who think differently, whose brains work differently, and that's not wrong and yours isn't right, it's just different. And there's a lot of misconceptions about autism. Yes. And there's a lot of places where my son is incredibly lucky because my son is a white boy and we've been able to give him the education that he needs and we've been able to provide that for him. It's far more dangerous for kids who absolutely don't have that kind of support, who often then end up dropping out of school because they just can't fit into that environment. So they end up with no options, with a lot of anger and frustration again, because you've done nothing wrong. You're being punished kind of for being different. There's a huge rate of arrest of people on the spectrum because they don't react in the same way. So the police go, put your hands up. If there's a whole lot of people and we don't know who's suspicious, and you might panic and curl up in a ball or you might run away because you just don't understand.
What are you telling me? So are you, wow.
And so there's efforts in the US to get police to hang out with people on the spectrum, to try and understand them, to try and work with them, because there's a real lack of understanding and there's a real lack of effort to understand.
I saw a doctor for the sake of a title.
Yes.
And she said two things to me. When I referred to my autistic godsons, she said to me, children like that should rather not be born. Mm. She said this.
Yeah.
It was also the last time I saw her. But she said, children like this shouldn't be born. And The other misconception that there is that children with autism are dangerous.
And that's completely untrue. And this comes up again and again when white people kill people, because otherwise it's terrorists. We all know that. But if it's white people, it's mental illness. And so often you find people being diagnosed with autism by like psychologists online who've never met these people, by the journalists, by whatever else. And autistic people can be dangerous to themselves. They can self-harm. They're not dangerous. There's no studies ever that have shown that. They avoid conflict. They avoid, you know, they don't want that. If there's any kind of, as I say, violence, it's either towards yourself a lot of times, or possibly if you're like in a crisis situation, you might accidentally hurt somebody. But no, it's absolutely not linked to violence at all.
What do you want to say to moms, dads, parents, single moms who are listening to this cast going, oh, I feel so trapped. This is my situation, but they're not as creative and free, because you are. I mean, Karen, you love all people, white people, black people. Karen's got like black brothers and sisters that I've never met. Okay. Like when I see her post, she goes, this is Liam's godbrother, godson, godmother, and they look like me. Okay. And I'm like, oh my word.
Absolutely.
What do you want to say to those moms? I mean, I know where my sister's been when it comes to her baby.
Yeah.
You know? So
It's often a battle. It's often a fight, and you feel like you're in a war sometimes, because people will tell you things about your child. A lot of people wanted him on medication, and I'm going, what for? There's no medication for autism. What do you want to drug him and calm him down? I mean, what does that achieve? You know, for some people, that's absolutely the right thing to do, but you've got to have an expert telling you that, not just a teacher who wants to calm a kid in their class.
Sure.
You're going to find even sometimes people close to you that don't understand, who are going to judge you, again, think your child is being naughty, think whatever. But I think the main thing is you have to embrace it. You know, my son's seen experts through the years who've often told me that their biggest struggle for that child is the parents, is when the parents are not willing to perhaps let go of ideals they might have had previously about what their child might be, and also believe that they can somehow discipline their child into being normal, into fitting the mold, you know, that, oh, if you don't achieve these marks at school, then I'm going to ground you. I'm going to take this away from you. I'm going to even hit you or whatever else. And that's just, you're not going to achieve anything. You're going to make yourself miserable. You're going to make your child miserable. And so you really need to make sure that you put the child first. There's also, you know, unfortunately, there's often a problem where parents center themselves. And they make it about them.
Okay.
And they make it about, my life is so hard because I have a child who's different.
Is your life hard?
I mean, you know, my life is hard, but my life is also awesome sometimes. And I think everyone has times when life is hard and life is awesome.
Awesome, yeah.
And I think that if you try and be a victim, or you even try and portray your child as a victim, then you're missing the point, and
but
you're missing
Karen,
out.
But Karen, my life, you don't know my life. My life is much worse than yours.
And that's the thing, is what are you going to achieve by that? Mm. You're not going to achieve anything by that. What you need to look at is, who is my child? What do they need? Mm. And how can I help? Because that's my job. I'm their parent. That's my job. My job is to raise this child and to give them the best possible chance in life. And it's not about what I want or what would be easy for me or what would make sense for me. That doesn't matter. He matters, or she matters, if you've got a daughter in this situation.
He matters, she matters. I love that.
You know, and we're just here to try and make that happen. And that's the thing, is you have a particular hardship if you're dealing with this. Mm. But again, you have particular joys. And, you know, one of the things Tim psychologist said to me is, you know, your son is never going to lie to you, because that's not a thing he can do. so that's a lovely thing as a parent of teenagers. Like, you know, he's not keeping any secrets from you, because he can't keep secrets. That's not a
what
thing
is
he
good
does.
At?
Oh,
I know he can write.
He writes, he creates, he's doing a game design internship at the moment.
Game design?
Yeah.
You say that like he's reading Diary of a Wimpy Kid, like, he's making games.
He wants to design computer games and be the next big thing. And so his little brother's learning programming now, so that they can do it together and take over the world.
So I wanted to ask you this. Does the younger one at all feel, I need more attention because you're spending so much time with my brother?
Absolutely, it comes up sometimes. And I think that Liam is an incredibly compassionate, generous child. And I think that a lot of that is because he's grown up with a brother who has particular needs, who has particular demands. I think it's essential to make sure that siblings don't feel less important or less than, but also that it's a great lesson to learn that sometimes actually you're really lucky. You're really lucky that you don't need this extra attention. Mm-hmm. You're really lucky that you can do that for yourself and you don't need me to do that for you. And I think that also Liam's been such a gift to Tim because, like, you know, Liam's like, oh, Tim, you're so funny and you're so clever and you're so, and to have that kind of respect that, you know, that's, oh, well, I might not be able to do some of those other things, but actually here's the thing I can do. And what else Tim is good at? Tim is really good with little children. Caring and gentle and he adores, you know, helping other people. I think that's something both of my boys have is that, yeah.
You're a great writer. And imagine you are being instructed, because people do that to us, to write a book about your children. What would the title be?
Oh, I don't know. That's a difficult question. But it's their own selves. That's what it is. Because they are such their own people. And I'm in such awe of the confidence that they have in who they are and the certainty that they have in who they are. I mean, Liam, I was talking about dressing up for FanCon, but since he was tiny, he's gone out dressed up as a wizard or dressed up as this, and he'll, you know, he started taking his stuffed toy to school, and suddenly all the boys wanted to bring their stuffed toys to school, and he's just so sure of who he is and what he is, and Tim as well, he knows 100%, and that's something that I think I struggled with for a long time, and I think that it's a real joy to just let them be them.
Life doesn't come with a manual, but it does come with a mother. And I think you're doing a fantastic job. I admire you. I don't, you know, when you look at someone and you go, you think to yourself, I don't know how she does it. I look at you and I think, I don't know how she does it. Mm. So thanks for being an inspiration to all of us as an ordinary person who does extraordinary things. I think you're phenomenal. And won't you please share more of those books that you read?
Yes.
You need to get me the title of that, eh?
Absolutely.
Will you?
I will.
What's it called again?
How to Become Incredibly Well Read in One Evening.
I want that. I want to be well read. I would like to be well. If you want to listen to any other podcasts about parenting, these are really cool people who they're just lending support and sharing their stories. Babybrunch.co.za. My name is Ilana. Would you like more jelly babies?
I think this is...
Which one's your favorite?
Orange.
The orange?
Yes.
How come the orange one?
I just...
I like the black and the red one.
Mm.
Because of the way they taste.
Yeah. That's the best reason to like sweets.